Coming to you from the Windy City, welcome to Let's Talk Shop, a podcast about all things cloud and enterprise tech. Listen to insights and guest interviews with IT thought leaders and professionals. Now, here's your host, Elias Knaser.
Very special guest, someone who's near and dear to my heart, and he doesn't know a lot of the things that I'm about to tell him about how he's impacted my career in a positive manner. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce Chris Wolf, who is currently Chief Research and Innovation Officer at VMware. Chris, it's great to see you again.
Eli, it's great to see you too. It's been too long. I'm glad we're getting some time to spend together.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have to do something around VMworld. Hopefully it'll be, we'll be able to fly to conferences again and have some in-person meetings.
Absolutely.
So most people probably know this, but for those that don't know this, you used to work at Gartner for a long time, correct?
I sure did. Yeah. 4 years there after Gartner had acquired Burton Group.
And how long were you at Burton Group?
About 4 years as well. I want to say maybe 3.5 years, something like that. So the time between Burton Group and Gartner was a good 7.5 to 8 years of my life.
Wow. Well, so I don't know if you know this, but you are the reason why I went to work for Gartner.
No, I did not know that.
So let me tell you a couple of funny stories. So the first time I saw you, and I don't remember what conference this was or what the topic was. All I remember is you were nervous. You were in front of some kind of a podium, and you were introducing the IDA scores for VMware and Microsoft on the hypervisors at the time. And I'll never forget, basically, you said something along the lines of, Microsoft's going to kill me today, but here are the scores. And that was was that Catalyst? Do you remember what conference that was?
It would have been either, we had done presentations at Catalyst and also at VMworld, Citrix Synergy for VDI. So there was a few. We were trying to take all the information on the road and be really, out there with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the very first time I'm like, that guy's cool. I want to do whatever research he was doing. And then the final thing was when you were leaving Gartner, and you wrote that blog post, How Do You Leave? I think it was titled, How Do You Leave the Perfect Job? Something like that. That was it. After that, I literally went through my LinkedIn contacts. I found Richard Jones and I emailed him. I'm like, I want to come work for Gartner. And he's such a cool guy. He responds with one line, here's a link for a job that I'm hiring for. And that's kind of how it went. I looked up and down for that blog, by the way, when I was leaving Gartner in August. I'm like, I'm going to butcher his blog because it just summarized everything I felt about Gartner. But I couldn't find it anywhere. So your blog posts were, you removed those, the old ones, right?
Yeah, I would say I was on the VMware Octo blog. I think the title was Why I Decided to Join VMware or something to that effect. So we'd have to look for it. And you mentioned like some of those presentations where we were doing these side-by-side benchmarks. And at the time at Burton Group, we were calling it evaluation criteria, but it ultimately influenced how Gartner does critical capabilities. And I'm really proud of that because, that style of research hadn't existed until we created it. And I think that's going to be at least my lasting contribution to a great company like Gartner. So that was really exciting times.
Yeah. Super cool. So since you were at Gartner, here's a little bit of an inside joke. I'm not sure how many people will get this, but that's okay. The right person will get this. So Chris, if I tell you right now, chat ? Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, that means drop what you're doing and call Drew Reeves. That's basically what that means.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So it's funny. So I didn't know when I was joining Gartner that I was joining Gartner for Technical Professionals. And I didn't know that I was taking one of the spots that you and Gunnar and Alessandro had vacated. I joined, and at the time, Mark Lockwood and Mindy Cancilla had already been there about 6 months, 7 months, something like that. And I joined, and us three became essentially the people that replaced you guys. So that's why I said at the beginning, you had an impact. We didn't even know that, all of this was happening in the background. So it was kind of cool. Gartner was a lot of fun. So pop quiz, what is your favorite Gartner conference?
It would have to be Catalyst for me. I mean, it's, I really appreciated the style that you would have at Catalyst when I first had joined Burden Group. And the fact that when you give people 20 minutes to just get to their point and state their thesis, and then leave another 15 minutes for a good debate and really strong Q&A, it was a conference style I really hadn't seen before. And I love it. And it's definitely influenced my thinking and how I even coach my people on how to get to the point on a conference, right? I have little patience for a conference presentation, say it's 45-minute presentation, and it's 20 minutes of introductory fluff, and then there's this expectation that people are going to stick around to the end when you finally make your point. It's like, no, make your point, and then let's get to Q&A and let's talk about it. And that's what I've always really appreciated about Catalyst.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was at Gartner, one of the things I used to always tell folks is I work here just to go to Catalyst in August in San Diego. So what's your fondest memory? What's the one thing that sticks in your memory from Catalyst?
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's a few. I would say one that was really exciting was this was Catalyst Europe. It was in Prague. And this was when, you know, we were a scrappy little research team. Gartner hadn't acquired Burden Group yet. But in spite of that, I was able to get Steve Herrod from VMware and Ian Pratt from Citrix at the time to join in a panel to discuss open standards for virtualization. And on the stage, we had gotten them to both agree to commit to the open virtualization format. So that was really exciting because in a lot of cases, we were aiming really high and, you know, we were having some good outcomes. I think the other one that really got Burton Group's attention in virtualization circles was before that we had done a debate on hypervisor performance, and it was between Simon Crosby and Scott Drummonds. And I really played it up with like some horrendous Photoshop and them boxing, and we called it the Thrilla in California. There's a lot of blogs that were written about it. And that was pretty exciting. And since you mentioned Drew, you know what, I'll give you one more. Catalyst was always known internally for antics, and I was definitely up there. I think, like we've talked about the answers as a service tool that I had distributed to team members. My favorite, though, one year at our company dinner for Drew, I had hired a basically somebody that's a singing telegram to impersonate Eminem, and had done a rap to Drew, replacing several lyrics to "Lose Yourself" with some nice jabs at Drew. So that was a lot of fun. There's a video out there somewhere. Somebody has it.
I've seen it. I have it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that was a good time.
Are you talking about the one where you're going through the paper as he's reviewing it?
Oh no!
I forgot about that one.
That was another one. Yeah, that was another one. There's some phone videos of literally rapping to "Lose Yourself" and dropping some things about working for Drew. And yeah, it was a good time. But he got me back the year after. He hired an impersonator of the most interesting man in the world to make fun of me. So all is fair in love and research, I guess.
Yeah. We did a few of those things. We tried to keep the tradition going at Catalyst. The Catalyst was always really a very special conference, and even customers really appreciated it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So pivoting from Gartner, I mean, there's a lot of great memories, great company, great people. Drew's awesome. And there's, you know, shout out to all our ex-colleagues there. They're awesome. But you moved on to VMware, and early on you were the CTO of the Americas, I believe, for VMware.
Yep.
So what did you do as CTO for Americas? Like, what was your role?
Yeah, it was an interesting role. Really, what we've tried to do at VMware, there's really only in a geo level, there's three CTO roles in the company, which the goal of this of the geo CTO is to extend the corporate CTO function and be that representative more in region, and to help the corporate CTO to scale a bit more. That's why, you know, at VMware we have a CTO for EMEA and Joe Bagley, CTO for APJ and Guru Venkatachalam, and we just named a new America CTO in Amanda Blevins. So it's a fairly interesting and challenging role, in that the expectation is that you can sit in a boardroom with C-level customers, be able to brainstorm in real time and iterate on solving some of their more difficult challenges. It doesn't just require like a strategic mind, but then also the ability to have some depth and breadth across the VMware product portfolio so that you can really represent the company with a high degree of authority. That's the key part of the job. The second part would be really channeling new innovation into VMware R&D. You know, the way our philosophy is that, you know, well, first VMware will take anything you're willing to give, but then also, you know, we want our innovations to be customer in. So we've had our field CTOs also lead innovation projects inside the company. I wanted to personally move into more innovation roles. So some of the work I was doing as America's CTO was getting AWS Greengrass certified on VMware's platform. And then after that, we did the same thing with Azure IoT Edge, which even to this day, last time I checked, we're the only non-Microsoft hypervisor that Azure IoT Edge is certified to run on. And, you know, those are important. So it's then, you know, making VMware as a company has a strong intellectual and innovation culture. But it also you have to be willing to be assertive and to go out and drive some of those changes on your own. And, and there's just a lot of a good collaborative culture, I'd say, also in the company that, you know, really helps with that.
So I'm going to be honest with you again. I'm sure you'll appreciate this, and you know the analyst mindset. So I'm going to be straight up with you. VMware as a company has had a very positive influence on my career throughout, whether it was consulting, I've written books, I've done training on VMware. I love VMware. I mean, I'll never forget the first time I took a VMware course. It was by accident. I'm like, my manager's like, take some courses. So I took a VMware course, stopped halfway through, went back, and I'm like, we're virtualizing everything. This was ESX 2.4, I think. But so I feel like VMware at one point had some issues. So let me give you a couple of examples. So early on in the cloud days, when, you know, public cloud was starting to become popular, it felt like VMware tried to fight the trend. So, you know, the Salesforce was trying to basically advise their customers not to adopt cloud. So there was a little confusion there. Then there was the whole shebacle with vCloud Air, which to this day, I still think that was a major mistake that VMware abandoned that project. I'd love your opinion on why was vCloud Air abandoned? I mean, it was still early on. You could have easily caught up.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of reasons for that. There were some architectural challenges. You know, the fact that VMware was owned by a hardware company was also exerting influence on Bill Fathers, who was leading the team, and limiting the way that he can even architect and build and deliver a cloud. Which wasn't really fully setting a great, I think, cloud leader in Bill up for complete success. The other challenge was you had companies several times the size of VMware making massive data center capital investments that VMware was not equipped to be able to keep up with. So it really came down to a business decision that it was better for us to build a software layer and partner building out a VMware cloud than to try to own and operate our own cloud data centers. Now you can see where we've come with AWS and all of the other hyperscalers is we're kind of in the middle now where we are owning and operating a cloud that runs on AWS infrastructure and being able to sell that directly to customers. You know, VMware Cloud has grown quite well, and we've been able to do it in a way that creates a lot of room and opportunity for our different cloud and hardware partners, which is also, I think, important. That's also, I think, helped in VMware's success. So I think it was a hard decision to divest from the cloud business to be a full owner operator ourselves. But I, you know, looking back, I believe it was the right decision because it would have been very difficult for us to keep up. And I mean, if you think about it, looking back, right, there's others that have been same thing where if you're capital constrained, and this is a smaller company, take a company like DigitalOcean, where they've done great work, but it's hard to get to the level of an AWS when you don't have that that significant of a capital backing to get you there. So we're trying to find our spots. And I'd also say, you know, with vCloud Air, people were saying, if you're not a cloud provider, you're not going to be able to be successful. And that was I even heard that from some analysts at Gartner. And I said, look, I cannot disagree more, because that would be saying that the entire software industry should just pack up and go home, right? That you can't be a software player and also augment the cloud ecosystem, which, you know, obviously today you see you can, right? There's lots of successful companies. So I think it's, you know, to the credit of VMware leadership, folks like Pat Gelsinger at the time and Raghu Raghuram, right, our new CEO, they made the difficult call. And I would say it was the right thing to do for the company. And, you know, we're really getting into that next chapter of VMware where we're playing an important role in cloud, but not doing it in the ways I think some people might have expected.
So I don't want to dwell on this because, I mean, it's in the past, obviously. But see, here's where we disagree a little bit, because my challenge with this is, so I love the fact that you mentioned, hey, we were owned by a hardware company. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. But the rest of it, VMware has such a grip on the enterprise space. I mean, there's, what, 80% or more of enterprises that are running VMware at a large percentage, right? These are your customers. So from a capital perspective, I mean, especially knowing that you can leverage all these colo providers and just deploy hardware, which you're already doing anyway with things like VMware Cloud on AWS, it just feels like that was a missed opportunity, because the capital could have been there, but we're not going to dwell on the past.
No. And look, what I would say is stay tuned. Stay tuned. Because we have some interesting plans, especially we see sovereign clouds as very opportunistic. And this is to your point of our affinity for the enterprise and really understanding how to operate a very large number of these independent infrastructure solutions. We're giving a lot of thought to that. And I think as we move further into the year, there'll be more that we can share as a company.
Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit from the CTO role. You are now chief research. I love that you have research in your title now. So you're chief research and innovation officer at VMware. How is that different than what you were doing? What are you focusing on? If we were to put it in product terms, is it a certain product that you're innovating in, or is it across the board, or is it the next generation? What exactly are you doing?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of history there. So when Greg Lavender became CTO, he gave me the opportunity to form a new team called the Advanced Technology Group. And really the work I had done in building ATG, as we call it internally, is what really led to this new job. And what was important was I was really interested in learning how as an innovation organization can you just skip the prototyping process, which happens a lot. You look across the industry and you have these CTO offices, they build prototypes and they, quote, hand them to these different lines of business and say, here you go. And in many cases, the business units are like, well, this isn't even written in a way that would match our engineering skill sets. This is using a language that we're not really interested in, or, you know, fill in the blank, right? There's lots of reasons why there might be architectural incompatibilities to prototypes. There's lots of reasons why lots of good prototypes are created and they don't tend to go anywhere. So what I said was, I think we can do this differently. So the charter of Advanced Technology Group was to build new technologies on a sub 2-year horizon that VMware could package and ship. In doing so, one of the first measures I had put into place was to say, we are not going to build a product unless we have full alignment with the BU that would ship it. And full alignment meant we would have a senior engineering leader as an advisor to the project team. And we'd also have a senior product manager also as an advisor to the product team. In doing so, we were ensuring that everything that was built was architecturally aligned, it was code compatible, it was aligned to the BU's roadmap, it was things that they were sponsoring and were behind. The net result is the technologies we would build would be late stage alpha or early beta software that can go to market very quickly. To give you a specific example, we did Tanzu Kubernetes Grid on bare metal as a project last year. That was a project that went from concept to in product in about 9 months. And this is something that, you know, was kind of like, you know, a heresy at VMware in the past, right? How can you build a bare metal product? And it's like, well, we're doing it because customers want it and need it. So it makes a lot of sense. Another example I'll give you just around the alignment side is we had a project where we were building some self-discovery capabilities for more edge use cases for Carbon Black. Interesting tech. We thought we had good alignment, but as the project got several months down the road, the BU said, you know what, that's not really a priority for us anymore. So in a lot of innovation circles, what people then do is say, you're wrong. I'm going to prove that you're wrong, and I'm going to double down on this. And we didn't do that. We're like, our customer's like, hey, you know, not a need for this. So we just said, peace out. We shut down the project. We had some security engineers with free time, and we immediately pivoted them to crypto agility, which we announced at VMworld last year. It will be in Workspace ONE soon. And now we have modular crypto capabilities in our products, which I think is an industry first. So that was a really interesting pivot. So that's kind of what Advanced Technology Group's about. Now, when VMware, sorry, this is a long answer. I just want to give you full context.
Okay. Keep going. If you can also touch on the crypto stuff, like what exactly it is, but finish your thoughts first.
Yeah, sure. So over the summer, we made some changes in the VMware CTO organization when Greg Lavender had left and gone to Intel. And in doing so, you know, both Kit and I had some great conversations with Raghu, And Raghu was looking at a way to pair us both together to really drive a lot of impact for the company. So basically what we did was we took the traditional Okta organization that Greg Lavender had led, and that organization then rolled into me and as a new team we called Research and Innovation. So that was VMware's research group. It was our ATG for advanced development. It was our XLabs programs. It was our open source program office and a lot of other specialty organizations that sit in there, such as government outreach field and things like that. So that's my organization. We have a broader Okta under Kit that has a lot of our central engineering services that Kit also runs. So he's a partner, but that's kind of how the new role came to be. We're about 300 people, and our number one metric is technology transfers. That's what I care about. It's alignment. It's all things lead to technologies our BUs can ship. And if I pivot back to the crypto agility point, basically what we've been able to do is we've been able to decouple crypto and cryptographic libraries from the application binaries themselves so that via policy, I can say, you know, this requires a quantum safe cipher, or because of a different government's local crypto standard, we're gonna adhere to that. You know, we've seen companies that maintain multiple versions of applications because they have to run in different countries with different crypto standards. Mm-hmm. So we're saying let's decouple that and make it really dynamic. And it's what we're seeing from customers is, today, they already have a use case for crypto agility, which is really being able to operate in different parts of the world. But going forward, eventually, we're going to need to roll out quantum safe ciphers across the enterprise. So if you can build your applications future-proof for that and just modularize crypto, it's a huge win. So right now, we wanted to prove that it can work in Workspace ONE Unified Access Gateway, which we've done. So stay tuned there. Second is, we have a second phase of the project where we're building a platform by which customers can build and manage their own crypto agile applications. And I think later into the year, we'll be talking more publicly about our work in that space as well. But we're also moving really quickly, and we're pretty excited about the intellectual property we've been able to build there, a lot of the thought leadership and market leadership as well. And that's one of several security-related innovation projects that will come into product, I think, quite soon from VMware.
So is that the area that you're focusing on right now, or is the team focusing on? Can you tell us maybe, and I don't know if this is some stuff that you can share, but are there any projects that you're working on that you can tell us some tidbits about, some cool projects that you think?
Yeah, sure. I think there's several. So basically, part of my role has been to really define the North Stars for research and innovation in the company. And, you know, again, for me, it's all roads should lead to something that the company can ship and sell. That's first and foremost, and it needs to be grounded and calibrated against the needs of our customers and partners. So we try to pull them into the innovation process. Security is one area. Machine learning is another. We're doing a lot of work around multi-cloud, edge computing, and modern applications. I'd say those are predominantly the themes that we've been chasing. Something that will be open source very quickly. We've built a new, very high-performant database. One of the first use cases for it is for key value stores. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a performance delta between what we do and what's available, or competing solutions, say, such as RocksDB. We're at about a 7 to 10x performance difference on our platform. And this is a very lightweight database. It's about 20,000 lines of code. We're seeing a lot of strong interest from partners there. So that's an area of something that you may not have expected, I'd say, from VMware. That's one that's fairly exciting. We've been building technology that would allow our SD-WAN device, Velo Cloud Edge, to run in cars. We already have a partnership that we're continuing to foster there that would allow this to be deployed at a scale of around 50,000 vehicles. Supporting a fairly large police organization. So that's a couple. I mean, I can go on. There's more, but I think those are a couple of good ones.
So the key value database, that one's interesting. Again, that's another component of a public cloud, you know, that you could have easily plugged in. But will that be available as a service? Like, will that be part of, I don't know, VMware Cloud on the providers? Or will that be an on-prem solution? Like, how is that? Any thoughts on how that will come?
Yeah, both. We see it as a part of a broader database as a service offering. We see it as available on-prem for customers. We are releasing it as open source. We believe that for our Modern Apps business unit, we're going to be able to package and support it, and also offer some services around it as well. And there's a lot of use cases we see. So metadata indexing is one that we think is really exciting for us, because we can do writes exceptionally fast compared to other solutions, even from an indexing in front of other databases, such as Postgres. That's an area that we see really strong performance. So we think there's going to be a lot of use cases for this once it's out. And right now our plan is, we're not going big yet. We're going to open source. We're going to continue to build community around the project. And then, you know, as the year progresses, we get better or even a broader community adoption and more partners signed up, I think that's when you'll see more from us there.
Super cool. So you also mentioned multi-cloud. Multi-cloud is near and dear to my heart. I've done a lot of research on multi-cloud. So is that going to be an expansion of the existing tools? Is there something new there? Is it cloud health that's going to expand? So can you give us a little bit more on where the focus is going to be for multi-cloud?
Yeah, there's a lot of, a lot of times I think the multi-cloud conversation comes in, we tend to think about management first, but a lot of the challenges of multi-cloud where we can help also is around security and compliance. So that's products like Secure State as an example. On the networking side, one of the best products right now we have for multi-cloud is our Avi Network solution, or NSX Advanced Load Balancer. Yep. So having a true, software-defined ADC gives you a lot of flexibility, and that's been really important. You know, our SASE offerings in multi-cloud have been really effective for customers. And then if we go to the management side, there's a lot of investment in cloud health and vRealize in those tools, but then there's also some next-generation management that we're offering that is incredibly high potential. If you just Google GitLab item, IDEM, you'll see our item project, which is really one of the things I'd say that we're also really proud of is we've been creating opportunities in VMware for the co-founders of startups that we acquired to do their next startup at VMware. Thomas Hatch with the SaltStack team is a good example of that. What's really exciting about item is, and you know this really well, is when we ship something like a configuration management tool for cloud, the second it's available, it's already outdated, right? Because the innovation is happening too quick. So you have to fundamentally rethink the architecture. And that's what items is so exciting. It's really taken a desired state approach to configuration management to say, look, I'm going to continually converge on a desired state, which is just, full awareness of the full spectrum of APIs and SDKs across these different cloud providers. That's what we have with item. It leverages plugin oriented programming. And just to give you an example, our entire coverage of the Azure API surface is roughly 300 lines of Python. When we say that, people are like, I don't believe it. That's impossible. How can that be? And we're like, okay, well, we're going to show you the code as part of the demo. But what's exciting now is as Azure is dropping new capabilities, we can self-discover at the config management layer, and then we can expose that northbound into other tools. It could be VRA from VMware, but it could be any tool that the customer prefers to use. So I think that's really important technology and getting people to think differently about like cloud management. You have to be continually self-discovering and self-optimizing, right, at that management substrate, or you're just always going to be behind.
I agree. So from the tone of your voice and the way that you're describing all of that, you're still having a lot of fun at VMware.
It's super exciting. I've worked my entire career to have an opportunity to lead an organization that could build new products. And that's what we're doing. And I would say that the I've given you some technology focus areas. The other thing that's really important is our lens for how we build technologies is we're looking at technologies that are differentiated and play to VMware strengths, right? We're everywhere. We're a highly distributed platform. We're in almost every customer environment, whether it's data center, edge, lots of clouds. So how can we take advantage of that type of footprint and that presence to build compelling technologies? Like another area that I hadn't mentioned yet is federated machine learning. You could say VMware is a company that's late to the machine learning space. True, no argument there. But when you think about federated learning, we think this is really where the future is going, because through federated learning, we can support data privacy concerns of customers or data sovereignty. And also we can reduce cost of data analytics by allowing the data services to run where the data is being created, as opposed to doing these massive backhauls of data, right, to larger data lakes in public clouds. Yep. So we think that's very opportunistic for VMware, and that's another area of investment for us.
I've got like a million questions I want to ask you, but in the interest of time, I want to pivot to a lighter side of things. I know I only have a few more minutes with you. I would love to do this again. Maybe we can talk about sovereign clouds. I don't know if that's going to be released closer to VMworld, but maybe we have another conversation around that, around the federated machine learning. I think that would be super cool. But let me pivot to a few lighter topics.
Sure.
So what is your thought or thoughts on the metaverse?
Sorry, I just had to silence a phone here. That's live recording, folks, right? Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think there's some debate about companies like Facebook trying to own the meta term, which is, you know, that's a discussion entirely. But I think when you think about it, there's a lot of work that VMware is doing around distributed edge that really applies to the metaverse conversation. Our leader for distributed edge, Kaniz Mahdi, is sharing a lot of our vision at Mobile World Congress, and we think that's it's a huge opportunity for VMware. We put a lot of research into thinking about what is next generation internet look like. You know, what is the role we play? We have seats on every major board that's really shaping next G or 6G networking, and we're, you know, I think, you know, if I was to give you one of my thoughts, and it's something that Kaniz and I both feel really strongly about, is to me, it's opportunity. It's democratization of innovation, and it's accessibility of innovation and content globally, which is really exciting. I think A, it levels the playing field, and then B, it creates opportunities for people that may not have ever gotten them in their lifetime. So I think that the promise is super exciting. We want to play a really important leadership role as a company. And this includes even, you know, Kaniz, as an example, has a board seat on an FCC committee that's looking at all of this. And, you know, we want to be out there. We want to be out in front of this. And we do think it's important. But again, to me, it's the social and people aspects that are most exciting, because, you know, there's other folks, right, that have greater access to technologies and greater opportunities. And there's other folks where the deck is stacked against them. And it doesn't have to be that way.
So any thoughts on Web 3.0? I mean, there's a whole debate going on the internet, pro, cons, and all the things that are happening on Web 3.0. Do you believe we'll get to a blockchain-based internet, so to speak? Any thoughts on Web 3.0?
Yeah, we think decentralized applications, and that's really where we're trying to drive the blockchain conversation is, you know, we're getting to a point where we can have applications now that are decentralized, meaning that there's ownership of the application by multiple parties working together in a consortium. And that's really where blockchain is going, is to more of a decentralized application platform. And there's new apps that are emerging. In the case of VMware, our technology and really the Byzantine fault tolerance engine that we've built and open sourced, in some cases is 100x more performant than other blockchain solutions out there. And because of that, we don't have the same amount of massive like compute overhead that you have with other blockchain-based solutions today. And this is one of the reasons that we're getting a lot of traction from customers with VMware blockchain. So what happens though, if you're 100x more performant, the whole idea that blockchain is bad for the world, that it's this massive carbon tax, et cetera, that goes away. We have customers today that have deployed VMware blockchain that have a positive ROI, because they're replacing multiple independent databases that are running in all of these different solutions. And these are very large enterprise scale databases that we can consolidate and run through a consortium through VMware blockchain. So yeah, I firmly believe it's going to play an important role going forward. And we're really excited about the technology that we've been able to build to be able to participate in that.
Final question. How many NFTs have you bought so far?
Zero.
I'm going to bring you back for an NFT conversation. Maybe at some point we will have a little bit more fun with that. Chris, okay. It's, you know, the conversation with you is never ending. I mean, I can ask you a million questions. You just brought up a million other questions that I'd love to ask. Thank you so much for taking the time today. This was a lot of fun. I'd love to do it again and then pick your brain maybe as we get closer to some of these products. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Really appreciate the time, Eli. It's always great to see you. And yeah, definitely. I think if not sooner, certainly once we get closer to VMworld, we're going to have so much we're going to be able to talk about. It would be great to be back and have that conversation again.
That sounds good. Well, thanks everyone for watching. This is another episode of It Depends. We'll see you guys and gals next time.